This interview with Rose Fan is being recorded March 29th, 1982.
First of all, just it would be good to get some background information as far as your birth date and where you were born and so forth.
Okay, I was born the 28th of June, 1933, in Union, Missouri, mm-hmm. which is a small town about 50 miles southwest of St. Louis.
And what year did you arrive in Madison?
1960 was our first time in Madison. We've moved here three times.
Mm-hmm.
So our first experience was technically in 1960, although I did graduate work here prior to that.
Okay, perhaps you could just tell a little bit about your family in Missouri and what your parents did, what kind of school you went to, and what the town was like.
Yeah. Okay, I actually did not begin school in the town in which I was born. I began school in Columbia, Missouri, which is where the University of Missouri is. My father was in the automobile business. And my mother did not work. I have an older brother and a younger brother, so there are three of us. My youngest brother was born in Columbia, so I began school there. But then it was the tail end of the Depression, and business was not good, and certainly small towns seemed worse than larger communities, so my parents moved to St. Louis.
Mm.
I suppose it must have been 1940, so I went to a school right in the city of St. Louis mm-hmm. at that time.
That was a public
probably,
school?
Yes, it was a public school. Festus J. Wade was the name of the school, as I recall, and I went to that school for 5 years. Then my parents bought a home in St. Louis County, so we moved out there then. Glendale was the name of the community, and I finished sixth grade in the Glendale school and then went to a junior high, which was called Nifer Junior High School, and then finished my schooling at Kirkwood High School, which was in Kirkwood, Missouri, which is a suburb of St. Louis.
Yeah.
So I think Webster Groves became more famous because of this TV show that was there, and that was our competition in football and basketball and all that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So that was my schooling, and then you want me to head on to college? Or
well, a little bit about... if you can add anything to the sort of the kind of social life your family had, and just any little details like that, but the climate of your family, if you could say anything about that.
I suppose, you know, my father always seemed very busy in the automobile business. You would, you know, your hours were very different. You might be on at night or you might be on during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that a lot of evenings, of course, he was gone because more people buy cars in the evening because they're tending to their own jobs during the day. So I guess he was gone quite a bit. But my parents bought a home in New Haven, Missouri, which is near where I was born and which was the community in which they were raised, really, and where they met one another. And we fixed it up as a weekend home so that we really had our weekends together. And those were really special times, you know. Everybody gets very busy, as we do today, in their own kind of life. But if you can withdraw from that kind of activity and be together as a family. And I still had a grandmother living on a farm about, 12 miles from where this house was. So we could easily visit her on the weekends and still spend time together, and
it sounds as though those were times you remember warmly, and and it was a fairly cohesive kind of family.
Right. Oh yes,
life.
We had a big rose garden out there, and we raised vegetables out there and got neighbor kids to water during the week when we weren't there, and still seemed to have enough fun growing what we could grow and harvesting that. And I remember one time I have a cousin who was in the hatchery business, and he was going to drown 100 chickens, which I guess they do if they don't have any real use for them. And my younger brother felt so badly that they were going to get rid of these cute little chickens. So we took them to the house, which had a place where we could keep chickens and all out in the country. And got neighbors to feed them and raised all chickens. Oh my goodness. Then my parents butchered them at times and, you know, would freeze them. So I don't know which is the worst thing. You know, do you drown them or do you butcher them later? But somehow when they're older, it's not as hard to get rid of them.
They're not quite as lovable.
Exactly.
And they're a little more useful.
Yeah. And I, you know, I enjoyed, you know, roaming over the countryside and what you could do freely and... would go nutting and berry picking and things of that sort, which I guess I still love today.
Uh-huh.
I enjoy doing that kind of thing.
When you were sort of heading off, leaving the family and going going to college, or maybe at, where did you go?
Okay,
to
I went to Washington University in St. Louis, which at the time when I was there was known as a streetcar college. There was only one women's dormitory, and there were some fraternity houses and I think two or three men's dormitories. So most of the students going to Washington University were from the St. Louis area. So I lived at home and either drove to the campus, which was about 10 miles from home, or took a streetcar and a bus to
so
get
you
back
lived,
and forth.
You
so
lived
I lived
at
home
the
yes.
whole 4 years.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
What kinds of expectations? What kinds of expectations did you have about your life? What did you think it was going to be like at that point in your life? Did you visualize how you're going to be spending your adult life?
Well, somewhat. I went into teaching. I was an English major and minored in education. And upon graduation, did teach at a junior high school for a couple of years. And I guess the reason I taught at the junior high was I really wanted to teach in high school, and several schools where I applied, and of course you could apply at more places because they were looking for teachers in those days. This was 1955.
Yeah.
Many of the so-called better districts or more established type of districts that weren't out on the fringes wanted you to have experience.
Mm.
And, you know, how do you get the experience
right.
without a job? So I found a job in, well, I guess it's South St. Louis County, teaching in a junior high for 2 years. And when I had my 2 years experience, I went to the principal of the high school where I really wanted to teach and said, well, I have my experience now. Do you have a job? And he said, yes, I think I do. And I got the job, which happened to be at Kirkwood High School where I had taught. I mean, where I had gone to school.
Oh, uh-huh.
So going back to a school from which you have graduated and teaching with some of the teachers that you have had a lot of respect for over the years, I found to be a very interesting experience because you get to know these people in a different way than you knew them as a kid sitting in the classroom listening to them.
Yeah.
So... as far as, you know, beyond that, I suppose I did figure that I would get married at some time and raise a family, and felt that if I were raising a family that I would not work.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's probably about as far as your thinking went.
I think so. I don't think I went beyond that.
Didn't
at least
your
I don't
entire life.
No, I don't recall.
How did you meet your husband? What were you doing? Were you teaching?
Okay, no. As a matter of fact, we were both at Washington University. He did his undergraduate work there also, and we met in a church group that was on campus. And oddly enough, I did not date him until I had graduated from college. I was dating other people at the time, and he was very busy as a pre-medical student and didn't really have that much time to socialize. So we knew one another and, you know, got together in groups with people that did not date.
Mm-hmm. So he was in medical school, and
yes.
then so you had a courtship of a certain amount of time, I suppose.
Right, a couple of years, and after his sophomore year in medical school, we were married,
mm-hmm.
and we knew that finances would be very tight at that time, and I continued teaching, But we weren't sure that my teacher's salary, because my first salary as a teacher was $3,000 a year, and then I think it was $3,600 the next year, and by the time we got married, I probably was making $4,000 or $4,200 a year.
Mm.
And the cost of medical school even then, you know, was quite high. He had a part tuition scholarship, but we still had to figure out how to buy books and this sort of thing. So we were caretakers of the Lutheran Student Center on the campus of Washington University, and we did janitor work for our rent.
Ah, which gave you a place to live.
That gave us a place to live,
yeah,
yes.
That's a good arrangement.
So it worked out quite well.
Yeah. So you just kept right on teaching?
Yes.
At the same time?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. And so that continued, yeah. The teaching would have continued for a while.
Right. I taught for 7 years, totally. Although, when I continued at Kirkwood High School until Mike graduated from medical school, and that was in 1960. And because I had been in Madison and had done graduate work a couple of summers, While I was teaching, I really loved Madison. And I suggested to him when he was looking for places to intern, well, why don't you check out Madison?
Really? And so that impulse came from you?
Yes.
Yeah.
He said, oh, I don't know. Well, I wrote the letter and the information came to him. And he looked at several other places, but when he came up here, he liked Madison too and liked the internship setup. And lo and behold, we moved to Madison.
And you've essentially...
For the first time. But we were here then for 1 year. And after he finished his year of internship, and during that year, I taught at Central High School, which is now part of MATC, but it was a high school certainly thriving at that time. So I spent the year teaching there, and then he took a postdoctoral fellowship back at Washington University in the Department of Biochemistry at the medical school. So back to St. Louis we moved for a year, but we both missed Madison and really liked being here. So he wrote to Dr. Philip Cohen, who was in the physiological chemistry department, to see if he could continue his postdoctoral fellowship with him. And he said, yes, that would be great. So we moved back to Madison for 2 years. And then Mike had to serve his time in the armed services and went into the United States Public Health Service so that he could do research at the National Institutes of Health.
Oh.
So we were off to Bethesda, Maryland for 2 years. And then when he was finishing that, he wrote back to Madison to Jack Strominger was the head of the pharmacology department at the medical school then, and asked if they needed anyone in the department, and he said indeed they did. And so he hired Mike as an assistant professor. And we've been in Madison since that time. So that was our third move to Madison.
So he has taught pharmacology.
Right.
And he hasn't ever been a practicing physician.
No, he's done research and
teaching.
That was
his interest from the beginning.
Yes, that's why he took the postdoctoral fellowship, and while the year in St. Louis, he did his work toward a PhD, taking the coursework, but decided he really did not need two doctor's degrees.
Hmm.
As long as he had the training, he didn't feel that the degree itself was necessary to pursue, so he did not.
All right. We can sort of move now to a slightly different area, and that has to do with the role that you feel that you have played in your husband's career. What would be the ways that you would say that you had helped him over the years in his career?
Well, I suppose, first of all, there was some financial support when we were first married that he could finish his training. Many times there are visiting scientists here who need to be entertained, and I seem to play a part in fixing dinner or doing something of that sort. When they're here, I also have done a lot of typing of his manuscripts. And I guess occasionally he'll say now? Do you say it this way or that way? And being an English teacher, I guess I'm the one who's supposed to know that, and I try to help him that way, although certainly he's very capable of taking care of most of the writing on his own, but just the typing, I've done a lot of that for him.
Proofreading?
So, to an extent, I've done some proofreading. These scientific terms, which are unfamiliar to me, and the the theory that much of his writing is, makes proofreading a bit difficult, other than just for sentence structure, you know, and that sort of thing.
And then reading galleys, probably. Do you do that?
Yes, yeah, I've done, you know, some of that, but he certainly has to do that to himself, just because of the charting and the terminology, which even after all these years, I'm still not that familiar.
So that his. Most of the entertaining that you have done has been a visiting, there's probably been some, has there been much departmental?
Yeah, there's some departmental entertaining also, but it seems very limited in pharmacology, especially.
Has that always been the case since you've been here?
Yes, yes, it has in that particular department.
I see.
And, you know, I guess some departments are more social than others, but that department has not seemed to get together all that much or entertaining other than when people come to give a seminar or a lecture or that sort. We've probably had more entertaining since he became an associate dean of the medical school, and therefore you're involved with a much wider range of departments and many more people, and you'll be looking for department chairman, and so you become involved, you know, with more than just the chairman of your department, but of all of the departments.
So your entertaining
so
is
that
probably
we do. It's
increased.
Picked up a bit, yes, since that time, but I enjoy it.
Do you usually put on, is it usually in the form of dinner parties or cocktail parties, or how does it?
The majority of times it's a dinner party.
And you do that, do you
I
do that pretty much
I,
yourself?
Yes.
Or
oh,
get
yes.
Help in
I,
to do it?
No, I do it myself. I enjoy cooking and doing things like that, so I have never even thought about having someone come in to do it, although having a couple of teenage daughters in the house does help.
Sure.
If you have a large group of people, they certainly are very good about serving.
Would it be accurate to say that that particular side of things has never seemed to be an imposition?
Oh, absolutely. No, I really perhaps enjoy it more than he does. I don't know, but I have always liked having people in. I like people, really, and an opportunity to meet people that you might not meet otherwise, I've always found interesting and exciting. So,
does that constitute, I know, I'm not trying to pry, but does that constitute the bulk of your entertaining, or are there many other kinds of entertaining you do
no,
too?
No, we do many other types of entertaining also. We have a number of good friends with whom we have become acquainted over the years in Madison who are not in the department that Mike happens to be in, and we get together with them frequently. We have a New Year's Eve party each year and have a number of friends in from both the neighborhood and other contacts that we have. So I would say no, that the bulk of our entertaining is not really for professional reasons, but for fun. We love the outdoors, and with friends do a lot of hiking and canoeing and mushroom gathering.
Really?
And things of that sort, yes. I've just become very interested in mushrooming in the past couple of years, first introduced to it through friends who would bring them over and say, now, we know these are really good, and we figured you probably would like to try them. And then would show me in the book the mushroom that, you know, this is certainly a safe one. And we enjoyed them very much. So I bought several books on mushroom. And last summer when we were on Madeline Island, I found, oh, several gallons of chanterelles.
Oh!
Really, in a half an hour,
oh,
my
wonderful
first time out, which was, I was just thrilled. You know,
sure.
I was ecstatic. And it so happened that Bud Brown and his wife, Bud is the dean of the medical school here, and they have a cottage also on Madeline Island, and they happened to be there at the same time we were. So we invited them for a fish boil down on the beach. With wild mushrooms,
oh,
and they said that they were willing to eat them because they knew that we would not prepare them unless we were certainly sure ourselves. And it was a treat. You know, it was really great. So this past fall, I thought, well, gee, I did quite well with the chanterelles this summer. Why not try hen of the woods, which some friends had given us before? And I walked through the Eagle Heights woods looking for them, and I found one that was 17 pounds. I took a picture of it. I don't know where it is right now, with a yardstick next to it, because, you know, it was like 18, 19 inches.
Was it too big to
just
be good?
No, it was beautiful. It was
That's
just
amazing,
because
when they get that big, oftentimes they're riddled
yes,
with insects.
Yes,
and stuff.
This was not. It must have been. Well, we had a very wet fall.
Yeah.
And I think that certainly helped
the
mushrooms to grow quickly.
Yeah.
You know, that you didn't have to worry. You know, if you got to them quick enough, you beat the insects there and they were good. But I cut this up, divided it up, kept a number of friends happy by taking it over to their houses. And I sauteed quite a bit of it and froze it too. So that's, you know, been another aspect of, I suppose, my love of nature. And it's fun to do that kind of thing. And when we have people over, we like to serve things of this sort, if they're willing. You know, some people are very skeptical about eating
anything about it.
That is wild. But, you know, if there were two mushrooms and you really couldn't tell if it was the deadly Amanita or the other, I don't believe I would try that myself.
No.
No, I'll take the morels and
well, there's certain ones
the
head
of the woods
yeah.
and those that are quite obvious.
Yeah, right.
That
yeah.
are good. So that's been a fun thing, and I guess we like to use that in our entertaining and our fun when we're out.
Let's see now how we.
I've gotten you off here.
No,
so I went off on a tangent.
That's fine. I'm very interested in mushrooms myself.
Oh, well, good, good.
I guess I'm interested in knowing if you can kind of you can put your finger on it. It's kind of a nebulous question, but to what extent do you see yourself as a faculty wife?
You mean how big a role does being a faculty wife play in my life?
Yeah.
Sort of
yeah.
How much of my time, or do I have time for something other than just this?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that has two sides to it in a way. Number one, I'm a faculty wife because I'm married to my husband. Number two, I have become involved with the University League, which in a way one might say I'm a part of that because I'm my husband's wife. But really, I think many people can be faculty wives and not become that involved in University League. And I have found that interesting, perhaps for some of the same reasons that I have found Mike's job as associate dean interesting, that you meet so many people from so many other departments. It gives you an opportunity to know other people. And each time you meet someone else, you can learn something from it, be it an interest in mushrooms or the out-of-doors, canoeing, whatever the interest happens to be. I find it a learning experience. So I have become, over the years, very involved in University League. Certainly, I joined when Mike was an intern here, really, for the first time. But of course, I was teaching and did not have enough time to spend on that kind of thing. And so in recent years, I've been more involved in interest groups and other projects, and I find it fun to be using my time in that way, because I feel it's worthwhile. If you're working on, say, the scholarship benefit, many of the committee meetings I have gone to have been meetings over what service is the organization giving and where else can the organization really be of service. And I think that's important. Today, so many women's groups are going down in number. It's very hard to find volunteers, I think, because so many women are working full-time and really cannot find those extra hours to be volunteers. But somehow, League's membership has continued to grow. And I think part of the reason that it has grown is that so many of the projects are worthwhile. And the projects are mainly centered on the campus. And I think if you're a wife of a faculty member, much of your interest does go toward the campus and the community in which the campus is situated also is an important aspect of that. So I have given a number of hours to University League, which still keeps me on the faculty side, I guess, or that connection anyway with that. But I do have other interests. I've been involved in the Shorewood Garden Club, a square dance group my husband and I have been in, which is happens to be in Shorewood. It's a neighborhood type of thing. I'm a member of PEO. I'm in a social sorority, and I've served as a state officer of that group, going around, I guess, being a troubleshooter of various alumni organizations, sitting down and talking to the officers, and if they don't have people coming to meetings, trying to figure out why and how can you change the program. Or what you're doing to bring people out. My feeling in talking to many, not just about University League, or really just many organizations that I've been involved in, is that unless my time is being spent in a worthwhile way, I'm not sure I want to do that. That's the feeling that I get, you know, from many people that I've talked to. Our world is going at a very fast pace, and I think we're all trying to keep up with it, whether it's children going in six directions and you get involved. And therefore, if you have 2 hours for yourself, something that you want to do, I think you want that to be worthwhile. You want to learn from it or in some way benefit from it. So I feel that our organizations have to keep up with that desire in the women who are willing to become involved in the organization. So I find it challenging to try to sit down and say, well, this is working here or this is working there, let's try it. And I suppose if I were in an organization that would not be willing to try new things or go in different directions, I may not remain in that organization all that long.
As far as having taken any courses. That's not a particular, mm-hmm. is that an area of university life that you have?
No, I have not taken courses on the campus, although I have taken several classes at MATC. When our youngest child was in nursery school, I thought to myself, well, now maybe this is a kind of teaching that would interest me, even though I had taught high school previously. So I took a course at MATC to become qualified to teach nursery school. And I taught for a couple of years and realized that this, at least for me, was not a terribly challenging kind of thing, so that I did not continue after the time that Jimmy was out of nursery school. Although I became interested in the, the business side of the nursery school. So for a couple of years after that, I was the buyer for 17 nursery schools around Madison, getting the supplies and keeping the books and that kind of thing, which was kind of fun because you would make contacts with businesses to get the best price you could and, you know, try to stay within a budget. And I found that more challenging than the teaching itself, oddly enough. And I've taken a quilting class at MATC, and I've repeated the drapery course, I don't know how many times. I figured they would give me an award finally when I quit coming, because I made draperies for the whole house. And given my kind of schedule and involvement in other activities, I didn't have 6 months that I could just sit down and make draperies. And my first project was the living room, and that started with 113 yards of fabric. So, you know, that was not the kind of thing, unless you really could sit down, that you were going to finish very quickly. So I simply blocked out the couple of hours per week that the class met to work on my drapes. Mm-hmm. And the tables and machinery and all that they have at MATC makes it a much easier place to work on a large project of that type than in your own home. And you know, I could never block off a dining room table for a long time, or the kitchen table or whatever, because there was always one other project, either typing a kid would have to do, or Play-Doh or something that Jimmy would want out. And so I'm not sure how many years I spent taking draperies at MATC. I felt, you know, almost like someone who has to repeat a course, how they must have felt, because I'd walk in and someone would say, "Oh, are you back? You know, are you here again?" And I'd say, "Well, yes," and I kept plugging away and finally finished the project.
It must have been very satisfying. The end product certainly was a success.
And you learn something, and you also meet some very interesting people in these classes. Most people, I must admit, are there for one project rather than. Decide you want to get something done. You know, it may take 5 years, and I think it did probably take me 5 years to do all the drapes in the house, but it's done.
Yeah.
You know, it was finished.
Let me just check the tape a moment. I wanted to just, we have already pretty much covered the area of what the kinds of different interests that you pursued. You obviously pursued a number of different interests that were just independent of your husband and of your kids. Would you say that you made pretty much a conscious decision that you would not again go out and teach once you had your children, or have you ever thought about?
Oh, I have thought about it from time to time. The present market for teachers is certainly very limited, and given the layoffs that even the Madison schools are faced with, I don't feel that the prospects right now for going out to, say, get a high school teaching job are all that great. And I have not really thought about it seriously. I have thought, of doing some writing, perhaps children's books or something of that sort. And even though I have not sat down to do the actual writing, from time to time when I get ideas, I have a folder that I keep ideas in or thoughts about articles or books that perhaps in a few years I might have the time to sit down and actually try that and see what would happen. So perhaps my thoughts have not been to go outside the home and teach again, but perhaps find some things that would be in the same field that I was in, but that could be done at home as I, found the time to do it.
It sounds as though you are a person who feels very comfortable within your home and and finds that a
yes.
satisfying place, and that there are a number of different directions you can go in.
I think that's true. You know, certainly I have not felt a need to be employed. And I think because my involvement in various activities, this past year I have been a volunteer at the Attic Angel Nursing Home, and that gives me an opportunity to see another aspect of life and to learn something about aging, and to again meet other people. And I think as long as I have that interest satisfied, perhaps I don't feel the need to teach again or whatever. A couple of years ago I gave this some thought and figured, well, now teaching maybe is not the area that needs people right now. Perhaps I might find an area that I'm not even aware that I'm interested in. So I went over to continuing education and took one of their workshops on figuring out what career you might be interested in, and took some of the interest tests and things that they give, that they run through a computer, you know, to tell you what you might be interested in. And it came back that there were two things that would really interest me. Number one was being superintendent of schools, and there are lots of those jobs available. And the other was being an English teacher.
Really?
So I thought, well, you know, number one, at least I was in the right field when I did teach, but I'm not sure that I have found the area or direction in which I should go. So maybe if I'm that embedded in the idea, I should just take some time and write and forget about going out to be employed.
That's
but
lovely.
I couldn't help but laugh that, you know, here's a field I've been in. But then maybe one answers an interest survey, because, you know, this is the way your interest really is. I mean, you were in that field, you know a lot about the field, and perhaps your answers somehow come about because of that. So I talked to Carla Heimerl then, who taught the course after that, and said, well, that, you know, I wasn't out looking for a job immediately, I was just trying to get some ideas. And she said, well, that's the perfect position to be in, that you don't have to find a job tomorrow or next week or later, but you have time to assess the situation and know. And she mentioned a couple of agencies and all that perhaps would have jobs if I were interested, you know, in working that way. But I did not pursue that. I just took the workshop to see if there was some other area maybe that I should head toward that might be
thought of.
Yes,
area.
That would be different.
Those tests can be very interesting.
I do think of this sort of thing from time to time, but I feel that volunteerism has filled my life enough that I haven't needed to pursue that aspect. I don't think I would be happy just staying home day in and day out. Scrubbing floors and that kind of thing is not the most challenging job in the world, although it has to be done.
I'm just curious.
Yes.
What is your feeling towards the women who really have a kind of gut reaction against volunteerism and who just avoid it like the plague either feel very, I don't know if they feel threatened by it, or, just have a very negative reaction. How do you react to that?
Well, I guess I don't feel any, anger toward them because they don't necessarily respect what I'm doing. And I think some don't. I mean, they think, what a waste.
Mm.
Why don't you go out and do something worthwhile? I often got that kind of question, too, when I was a new faculty wife, and they'd say, what do you do? And
yes.
I'd say, I'm raising two little girls, because I didn't have my son at that time. And then I'd be asked, well, what else do you do? In other words, well, you must be capable of doing something else, than staying home raising children. And I guess I feel the same way. Many people will criticize a job, volunteerism or whatever, but they've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really know. And until you have experienced something, I feel you cannot adequately criticize it. And so if someone says, oh, poo, volunteerism, who cares? I figure, okay, you have a right to your opinion, I have a right to mine. I find it satisfying. You don't, then you have to find whatever it is in your life that satisfies you. I think we went through a period, certainly, where women felt they had to get out of the home and be employed, even if they didn't want to, because that's what society seemed to be dictating to them at that time. And I guess I feel okay, do it. If you really feel strong enough that that's the way you're going to get the satisfaction that you need, then maybe it's more important that you're out working than staying at home trying to fight that attitude. I guess I have not felt that need, even though I have felt some of the pressures around me and the feelings that I get, because I had a profession at a time before I had a family. And I guess if you have done something, you feel you're capable of it. You could go out and work, you could do this, you have your education, maybe you don't feel quite as threatened by those feelings. Perhaps if I did not have an education, I may react very differently than I do, but I don't find it particularly threatening.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that the fact of your husband's profession has influenced your life, and if so, in what ways?
You mean his profession as a faculty person or as a physician or whatever?
Both, but particularly the faculty.
I think certainly it has influenced my life. My involvement with League certainly has given me a circle of friends that I might not have if we were not connected in some way to the university. And it somehow, I guess, broadens horizons. There are many things that go on campus, cultural concerts that you go to, because you are a part of the campus. Several years we attended the faculty concerts that the music school had. Mm. I think they're marvelous concerts.
Yeah.
You know, they have a great group of musicians there who probably do not have the exposure to the general public that they should have or that they deserve. I mean, they're certainly capable people. And I think when you're on campus, you read the blurbs, you read the information of what's going on at the Elvium, at the music school, the various schools, and therefore you attend those concerts. We probably go to more on campus than we do at the Civic Center.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly, I guess, is an influence in a way as to the kinds of things you select to do with mm-hmm. your free time. Certainly has been influenced in a way by the campus and what goes on there and the fact that Mike is at the university. Can't really think of other specific ways that's been an influence. Certainly a big part of your time is involved with the university.
Mm-hmm.
If he had a 9-to-5 job somewhere else, we may not be that involved with what goes on the campus and might spend our times differently. But I guess we find our free time very important, and we're very selective then by what we do with the free time, because he's busy during the day, and then many evenings is at home writing his manuscripts, which mm-hmm. he hasn't had time to do during the day when he's on campus busy doing other things. So, you know, yes, it's influenced my life. It's perhaps given me fewer times that we can do things together because he's very busy.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else seems to be mm-hmm. zeroing in right now in that direction.
Yeah, no, that's this is very interesting. It's really exactly the kind of
thing
that